The interview you are about to hear is with Pessy Seinfeld, who participated in a lending library subdivision of Pop C. She borrowed an artwork from the censorship project, and this interview is about her thoughts while she lived with the drawing, particularly in respect to censorship directed at women.
I want to ask you about two different things. When you and I had the conversation that we had, you said some things to me that I thought were really amazing, because I've thought a lot about them.
Okay.
So one thing that amazed me about what you said was that in your ultra-Orthodox community, right, you had to dress a certain way, like women always do,
right?
And then it pretends to be all about desexualizing women,
right?
And not making women objects of desire. But you said, in fact, you realized that it did the virtual opposite.
Right.
That
true.
When you started Brooklyn College, and for the first time you could wear, like, ordinary clothes, you said for the first time people didn't look at you in a very sexualized way.
Right, yeah. I can try to talk a little bit more about it, because the more, it's so funny, because the more I'm in, let's say, the outside world or the more secular world, at the same time I'm in touch with my sexuality, but I'm not being sexualized, like, you know, in an overt way anymore at all. So, like, having this contrast between being in my community and being out sort of, like, made me realize how much my community is sexualizing everyone within it. Because when we put so much emphasis on dress, and I feel like it's not just my community, it's probably any fundamentalist community. Like, I feel like even the Muslims might be sexualized.
Yeah, because, right, like, yeah, right around here, you know, there's a Yemeni community, right?
Oh, really?
Yeah. It was on Atlantic Avenue, right? Oh. It's a little less than it used to be. But I knew a lot of the women from that community because their children went to school with my children, right? Mm-hmm. And one of them that I became friends with, she was actually Jordanian. She wasn't Yemeni. But she said that a man, Muslim man, came up to her and said, you know, sister, I can really see your rear end in that gown.
Oh, really?
And she was really angry. And she said, she was sort of a tough woman. She said, well, what are you doing looking?
Right. Yeah.
But you know, the pressure was on them to not show.
I feel it's because of the repression.
Yeah.
It's so interesting because the repression of sexuality, like, in essence, causes you to be frustrated, which causes this complete sexualization of the opposite gender.
But it's kind of a fetishization in some ways, I thought you were saying, right? Because in any little
it's like
violation.
You're not supposed to look at women, but then if it's like sort of weird context, we're all obsessed with women because they have like all these like intricate laws. Like, for example, a skirt has to be, it can be less than 4 inches below the knee, because if it's less than 4 inches below the knee, when you sit down, it might ride up the knee. So then it develops like into this like a little bit of fetishization, because then they start measuring with rulers, like how many inches.
The men measure on the women?
The men, they have this whole community of men that gather, because the men are the ones that make the rules in the community, not the women, obviously.
Of course. Yeah.
So what's really weird is that you'll have this whole group of men coming together talking about women.
Really?
A woman dress code. How weird is that?
You know, I've grown to think that fundamentalist religion in general is only exists to control women. I know that sounds like a crazy thing, but I look at, you know, a bunch of different religions, all the same. It's this massive amount of power, control over women and dominating. It's just depressing.
I mean, I definitely agree with that. But, like, my brothers are also all controlled. Everyone in my community is controlled. Of course, the women are controlled in a way that men cannot even fathom.
Yeah.
But everyone is controlled.
That's true.
Yeah. Hardly anyone can break free that level of control, because it's a mental control. It's almost like a cult. It's like you're programmed from such a young child to think a certain way.
Yeah.
Very few people are ever able to completely break that.
So. You know, I sat here not too many months ago interviewing another Pop C person, you know, for the lending library, and he was a clerk for Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Mm-hmm.
And he said the only time they really, really disagreed was over a law that was about education for the Orthodox communities in upstate New York, and they wanted to not be able to send their girls to public school.
Right.
And her argument was, no, that's the only chance these girls ever get to ever break out of those communities.
Right.
You know, so
right.
I think it's really true that education is so valuable for them.
Yeah, it's so upsetting, because, like, I don't know what's happening in New York and all the legislation, but there are people actively trying to fight that the schools in Borough Park, the Hasidic sector in Brooklyn, should get shut down because we're not following the basic principles of the Department of Education set forth.
I read this.
And yeah. I don't know what's going on. If there's bribery involved, if the Hasidic community just has this ability to sort of get everything to work out and control this whole government. It's funny because from a very, very young age, I feel like a child sort of sees the world in a different way than an adult does. We're more like innocent, right?
Sure.
So we're thinking is like less filtered by outside influences. So before I started being sent to school and being programmed, like how to think and whatever, I remember thinking that, you know, this doesn't make sense. Like one day I'm going to have to break free because I always like, everyone is the same. There aren't these differences. Like, it doesn't make any sense. Every person is equally good because there's a lot of racism in our community where we think we're better than the rest of the world, which is every fundamentalist religion has the same thought.
Yeah, yeah. And, I think that's
probably like,
true,
you know, but a
said,
child
yeah.
isn't born racist, though. It doesn't happen like that. Like, you know, we're indoctrinated to be racist. So before the indoctrination happened, I was never really able to buy it because I remember having this thought, like, this doesn't make any sense. We're all the same.
You know, you lived with those paintings for that I did, you know, for about 6 months.
Yeah, a
and
long time.
And one of them was a picture of an angry woman, right? And the other one was the censoring of that angry woman. So can you talk a little bit about that? Let me just say one more phrase.
Yeah.
When I wrote the book, on censorship, I was thinking more about sort of the epistemological function of language, what we were talking before.
Okay.
You know, that when people have a chance to look at things from somebody else's point of view, then hopefully the truth does emerge and people can progress forward and with consensus.
I remember we were talking about that. Yeah.
And so, and I do think that that's true. But when I did all of the artwork, I realized that a lot of what gets censored in our society is against women. What we were just talking about. Partly because of religions, but partly just because of power structures.
Right.
You know, once a power structure gets in place, it kind of perpetuates itself. You know,
right.
So a lot of things are not allowed of women that are allowed of men. And a show of anger seems to me like one of them.
Mm-hmm.
So would you talk a little bit about what you think about that?
Okay, so regarding the painting, I was like thinking about it for a few months. I wasn't sure about the face of the other woman. I was like, is she angry? Is she just thinking? I was like trying to figure it out because the first painting where, you know, the woman was censored, okay, it was very obvious what it was.
Yeah.
But my first thought is like, why is the woman that's censored? Why is her background all pink and feminine and girly, you might say?
Yeah.
And why is the woman that achieved the freedom? Like, where did all femininity go to? Like, what happened to that?
Huh, that's interesting.
That's how, like, I saw it. So I was, like, trying to figure that out. Like, I was like, is she angry because she has to be powerful and she lost her femininity along the way?
So what do you think femininity means, then?
Okay, so it's really interesting because it's really complicated. Everyone experiences it in a very different way, just like we were talking about in their voice that everyone has, right? So it's, like, really different for everyone. So, I mean, feminism was all about equality, right? Like, generally what it is, so that women should be seen as equal and their voices should be respected, too.
Mm-hmm.
That men shouldn't be this power struggle of men dominating, right? But then I was thinking, like sometimes, like, why can't you have both? Like, if you want, why can't you just be dressed up all girly with, like, pink clothing, I don't know, say, ribbons in your hair or whatever, and still be able to have, like, some sense, some sort of power and authority with that. Like, we should be able to have that. I don't know. And that, yeah.
So, do you remember, did you ever read that book by Mary Wollstonecraft that she wrote, like, in the late 1700s called, was it called The Vindication of the Rights of Women? I think that was what it was called. And so she talks a lot about, and John Stuart Mill does also, in a wonderful essay called The Subjection of Women. And, you know, they both talk about what, I guess, what the symbolism is of femininity, right? And for the frilly stuff and the pink stuff, it's all about being demure, which is all about non-assertion, very essentially,
right?
It's about not asserting yourself, right?
Right.
And so that femininity is always in contra to masculinity, and masculinity is all about power and strength and assertion, and femininity is all about being demure and being passive. And
I hair.
Right. And okay. So a lot of the frilly stuff has...
But you know what's, like, really interesting? But, because, for example, it's funny because I feel like women maybe are trying to achieve that balance of, like, a little bit of passivity because, like, in relationships, they like the man to lead and they like the, they enjoy the catch, right? But then, on the other hand, they still want to be taken seriously. Like, yeah. It has always been in history where women weren't taken seriously because they were considered passive or even stupid, right?
Yeah.
Like, specifically in biblical terms, like in Talmud, there's like a line, in Talmud that says straight out that why do the rabbis have control of, like, why are they taken seriously about the opinions? And it's like, because we can take seriously a woman's opinions because a woman is controlled by her emotion.
Yeah,
and men aren't.
Yeah,
so, like, you know, women cannot be taken seriously. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and so emotion became, and the expression of emotion became a very controlled thing.
Yeah.
And that was why I thought, oh, anger is... is seriously disapproved of in women,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a funny thing because, you know, you get into these positions and it's kind of natural to be angry. And in order to stand up for yourself, you kind
right.
of have
like,
to be angry.
Being a truth seeker.
Yeah.
It comes along with being angry.
Yes.
But, like, when you think of a truth seeker, are you going to think of a woman or a man?
Yeah.
Exactly. Like, yeah. Even if you look at our philosophers, we're all men. I mean, we're, like, our truth seekers, the foundation of truth seeking, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that that's right. And so it's very then hard for women to go, no, that's wrong, because they don't have any model with which to say that.
Right. Like, they're, I would, all, like, you know? Specifically in my circumstance, because, like, I come, like, from an interesting community, I was wondering how my story would have unfolded differently if I would have been a male. It's
yeah.
something I'm always busy thinking
so
about.
So how do you think?
I think it would have unfolded very differently because everyone would have taken me more serious.
Uh-huh.
I, like, because, like, within the community, the men are the ones that are taught to learn Talmud.
Right.
And the women aren't because their duties are within the household.
Right.
So,
it's a private public division.
Yeah, it's like a huge division between, like, opposite, like, between... the sexes. Yeah, it's like
master slave.
Like, yeah, it's like almost similar to the ancient times.
Yeah.
Yeah. I always wished I was a man because I felt like people weren't taking me seriously.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, no, I don't want to cook. Again, some women want to cook, so let them cook. I'm totally okay with that.
Yeah.
But there should be this fluidity that women aren't just supposed to cook, they can do other stuff. Like, you know, some women, like, you know,
want to think.
Yeah.
For example.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you had been a man, right? So let's play this game, right? Mm-hmm. If you had been a man in your community and
I think I would have established a following and leaving the community.
Okay.
I think I would have, like, sort of opened up my own synagogue.
And how would you have done that?
I would have had a voice.
Would it have been an angry voice? That's what I'm asking you.
Yes. It would have been an angry voice. Yeah. But woman, there is no voice, like, there is no way for a woman to express herself. Like, how is a woman supposed to express her voice in the community? It doesn't go anywhere.
Because, because you can't be angry,
mm-hmm.
right? So how are you going to object to what's mm-hmm. going on when you can't be angry?
Right.
It's a real silencing, censoring kind of move,
mm-hmm.
but it's so profoundly effective. It's like you want to go, whoever invented that, that was a good thing to invent because, boy, does that shut them up,
right.
you know?
Right.
Like if you,
right, but why would people think that women aren't allowed to be angry? I don't get it. Like,
why do you think?
Start?
What does that do? When a society says the women that it's too ugly to be angry.
Obviously, it's very easy to control people who can be angry because they have to just go along with everything.
Yeah.
They can protest. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and when there's such a disapproval of looking angry, you know? There's been some, I've noticed...
Like, for example, like, there are protests within the community, but it's always the men protesting something, never the women.
Yeah. Anger is a really weird emotion, right?
Why is anger considered a masculine emotion? Like, why isn't it considered a feminine emotion, too? Because, like, apparently in our community, the reason why... I feel like anger is sort of considered, like, a more, maybe, logical emotion than other emotions, let's say, like, happiness.
Yeah.
Right? because the men in our community are like, we have control because we're less emotional than you, but yeah, we can be as angry as we want.
Which is very emotional.
Yeah.
You know, in literature, mm-hmm. in art or anything, women are never angry because it's considered so unfeminine and so unattractive. That's
right.
The fundamental thing. It's like unattractive.
Why? Yeah,
you know?
That is true. Right. Yeah.
And so that's the way that you get women not to do it, because it makes them unattractive. Mm-hmm. And it's this big, big, successful manipulation mm-hmm. of women's emotions because of it. So
right.
then women always kind of like stay in line and don't object too much because they don't want
right.
to be angry,
like,
and unattractive.
So I feel like when you have a different opinion, right, when you sort of want to be offensive, there's no role for a woman to be offensive, but there's many roles for males
yes.
to be offensive, right?
Yes. And yeah. so it's hard, like, and I think that's sort of what you're struggling with in some ways now, sort of psychologically.
Yeah.
Like, how do I be offensive and not be rejected? Well,
right.
there's probably no way to do it, because as a woman, in order to be offensive and to be angry about the situation, mm-hmm. you have to be angry, which is forbidden,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah, but, like, I don't just think that it's, like, the anger that it's forbidden. It's also, I feel like, my voice has been suppressed for so long.
Yeah.
And, like, specifically, it unfolded itself in so many, like, different ways in my life where I had to, like, first realize, like, I do have a voice. It took so many years of therapy to learn I have a voice. Like, first, a long time, I didn't, like, know anything about myself because a voice has been suppressed for
really?
Such a long
How
time.
How interesting.
I was like, I don't know what I like. I have no clue what my preferences are.
Wow.
I can't even make any decisions for myself because I have no clue what I want. Because a voice has been suppressed at such an extreme level, it completely shut down.
Huh.
I experienced this identity disorder. Yeah, it was, like, really profound. Like, it was, like, just a time of profound confusion. Like, literally going around trying to understand, how do I know who I am? A lot of, like, psychologists who talk about, you know, the stages of development in a human being.
Uh-huh.
And then I was, like, looking, remember, like, learning about them, like, specifically.
Like Kohlberg?
Yeah, or Erik Erikson.
Yeah, yeah, he's good,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then I was, like, over this, there is this stage of individuation we go through, but I don't think anyone in my community ever went through that stage ever.
Huh.
So it was like, no, in my community, that's like stunted. They just stop at a certain stage. They never fully develop into like their own
autonomous.
Person.
Yeah, because being autonomous is probably contrary to the functions in the
right.
community.
Yeah. So that was like, yeah, it took like a lot of time to try to figure that out, to have my own voice. Yeah. Like, and it's like so crazy because like when I would try to talk like years ago in the past, like I would verbalize it, but it would get like stuck in my vocal cords, and I actually have this sensation around like over here, like there will be a tightness in my throat every time I would try to verbalize something.
Wow.
And until this day, I struggle with singing. I that is like the last remnants of what remains, but I can sing. I don't know why. It's like my voice gets stuck. I don't feel like I have the right to sing. Or as a woman, you're not supposed to sing because the woman's voices are so sexual. So, yeah.
How fascinating. Congratulations. Yeah. Conversations, right? We were talking about the function of conversations and how the great thing about meditating is that you kind of dump all the thoughts out of your head, and then you have a chance to actually see things around you and hear people around
totally.
You.
Totally. You have, like, a totally different experience of quality. Like, like your whole day is different. I myself started meditating.
Yeah, it's really good, right?
Yeah.
And it's very hard to explain to somebody, like, what a great thing it is. Like,
I know.
Oh, it's so great. Just you don't think. You don't have any thoughts.
I know.
You just,
it's awesome.
It's awesome.
But, you know, it's like, yeah, it's sort of counterintuitive because, like, when you don't have thoughts, you feel like the thoughts are making you intelligent and are giving you all these great ideas.
Mm-hmm.
But when you don't have thoughts, it's like you get ideas in a different way. You experience the world in a different way. Like, your mind is, like, more open, maybe. I don't know.
I think, it's also calmer, right?
Yeah.
And so you see connections, maybe, it feels to me, that are genuinely there instead of the connections that your anxieties and worries and desires are forming around you. There's a kind, like you said, maybe an openness, right?
Right, yeah.
But life sparkles after I meditate. It really does. It's like everything around me is just like wonderful.
Fresh.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a freshness. Yeah, definitely.
Pessy is an extraordinary person. One of those rare women who have broken out from a religious fundamentalist community
insisted on her right to gain her own education, and then had the bravery to look back on that fundamentalist world. She was a student of mine at Brooklyn College, and I got to know her originally in that setting. And then after she graduated, we continued our contact with one another. I have learned much from her. In this conversation, she speaks of her life in the ultra-Orthodox Jewish community and the kind of control exercised over everyone, but particularly over women. Clothes are more meaningful than what we sometimes think, and the kind of clothes that women wear say volumes about how women are to be viewed. Pessy articulates very well the sexualized nature of religious garb. It is an interesting inversion. While claiming to desexualize, in reality, what religious garb for women is doing is emphasizing those bodily parts that are not to be looked at, thereby forcing more attention. It is a 180-degree flip. It is affirming their sexuality instead of denying it. Much of human communication has this paradigm. This was Nietzsche's point in his interesting, in my view, his only interesting, article titled On Truth and Lies in a Non-Moral Sense. Words don't refer honestly. As he says, this art of dissimulation reaches its peak in man. Deception, flattering, lying, deluding, talking behind the back, putting up a false front, living in borrowed splendor, wearing a mask, hiding behind convention, playing a role for others and for oneself. In short, a continuous fluttering around the solitary flame of vanity. Pessy also speaks passionately about the way that women are forbidden to be angry. While it was especially true for her in the fundamentalist community, she knows it applies to women in general. She is fully conscious and articulate about the impossibility of forming coherent responses to the world when you are not granted the right to be driven by the emotional response of anger. You cannot know what you are fully opposed to unless you allow yourself to be angry, for it is that that leads you to opposition. The demand to be amenable is a demand to be non-existent. As Mary Wollstonecraft says in her complaint of Rousseau's view of women, who he would make into a coquettish slave in order to render her a more alluring object of desire, a sweeter companion to man whenever he chooses to relax himself. Pessy articulates that. To censor anger in women is to diminish women's existence as humans.